Welcome to the official companion podcast series to the Showmax original series, Catch Me a Killer. If you're coming across this companion podcast for the first time, this is the seventh installment and covers Catch Me a Killer, episodes 8 and 9. If you haven't listened to the other companion pods, or heaven forbid, started watching the Showmax original Catch Me a Killer yet, you need to do that first and come back. If you're all caught up and ready to go, let's do it. The 8th and 9th episode of Catch Me a Killer cover the crimes of a serial killer that I was quite surprised to realize I haven't actually covered on the podcast yet. After more than 150 episodes, I really figured I'd covered every serial killer from the 90s in South Africa, but no, there are still a few I have not covered. And Sipho Twala, also called the Phoenix Strangler, is one of them. Sipho Twala's criminal activities span the early 1990s. Born in 1968, Twala grew up in KwaMashu, near Durban. Little is known about his early life, but his criminal activities began to gain attention in 1996 when a pattern of murders emerged in the sugarcane fields of KwaZulu-Natal. Twala's modus operandi involved luring women, often by offering them employment, to isolated areas where he would then rape and strangle them with their own underwear or clothing. His victims were primarily young women, and his crimes instilled widespread fear in the region. Twala's first known murder occurred in 1994, and over the next 2 years, he was responsible for at least 19 murders. The similarity in the cases eventually led the police to link the murders to a single perpetrator. Despite the growing body count, Twala managed to evade capture until 1997, when advancements in forensic technology and a concerted police effort finally led to his arrest. DNA evidence played a crucial role in linking him to the murders. During his trial, Twala was found guilty of 16 counts of murder and multiple counts of rape. In 1999, in a rather odd stacking of sentences, in my opinion, but one that was indicative of the times, he was sentenced to an effective 506 years in prison. Twala's case is notable for highlighting both the challenges and the advancements in South Africa's efforts to combat serial crimes around that time. His arrest and conviction brought a measure of relief to a community terrorized by his brutal acts. In her book, Catch Me a Killer, as well as some of her other books, Strangers in the Street and Profiling a Serial Killer, Dr. Mickey Pistorius speaks at length about the profile she put together when the SAPS was hunting Twala. It matched him almost to a T when they eventually arrested him. The only thing she got wrong was that she believed the killer would have a secondary education level, and Twala had only finished primary school. Hardly a major issue, though. There are different schools of thought in psychology, and although they're mostly consistent around the psychology of serial killers, each school does have a different way of presenting the information. Some deal in specific classifications, while others don't, and each school has different ideas about how far back the making of a murderer goes, so to speak. Dr. Mickey Pistorius practices in a school of thought in psychology which depends heavily on the formative years of a person to explain their later behavior. This reflects much of what the psychology pioneer Sigmund Freud founded his theories and principles on. In her books, Dr. Pistorius explains in detail how she found the various development stages of a child to reflect behavior in serial killers, and how she uses this to understand when and possibly how their fixation, as she refers to the murderous urge, developed. Pistorius also discusses and refers to a form of classification of serial killers, which is not used by everyone, but is used by the FBI. And that is the distinction between organized and disorganized serial killers. Generally, the classifications mean exactly what they say. Organized serial killers tend to have far more developed and detailed fantasies around their murders. They put a lot more planning into the victim selection and the scenes at which they kill and the manner in which they kill. Although there'll always be slight differences between scenes as a serial killer's fantasies develop, the scenes of organized killers will show fewer discrepancies. Disorganized killers, on the other hand, are often quite spontaneous, and their victim selection can change throughout the series. They'll often use different weapons and manners of killing, and the scenes can often be so different that in the absence of DNA or very close proximity of victim disposal, their crimes can go unlinked for long periods. A really good example of a disorganized serial killer would be Stuart Wilkin, whose crimes we discussed in the last episode. Also interestingly, Pistorius says that in her experience, although serial killers don't often have serious diagnosable mental health conditions, those who do are also disorganized in their crimes, while organized killers are more likely to have personality disorders such as significant psychopathic traits or narcissistic personality disorder. Sipotwala is what Pistorius deems an organized killer. He puts a lot of preparation into his crimes and was very specific about his victim selection. He practiced tying the knots that he used to bind his victims at his home. When he was arrested, the pieces of sugarcane outside his house had hundreds of pieces of material tied to them in different manners, and Twala explained that he would look out over the cane fields around his home where many of his victims still lay undiscovered and practice tying knots. In addition, Twala saved pieces of clothing from prior victims to use in future crimes. He would tear these pieces of clothing into strips and fold them into wads, which he would then insert into his victims' mouths to stop them from screaming. This was something that he spent a lot of time working on as well, adding to this organized element. Twala admitted that he would sit outside his home and meticulously fold the pieces of material and then place them in his own mouth to ensure they fit well. He would then walk around with these wads in his pockets, and knowing that they were there excited him, even when he hadn't planned to kill immediately. Twala's organization and planning went as far as the disposal of his victims in very specific areas in the cane fields, so that when the fields were burnt at harvesting time, the bodies would be destroyed too. When police started to locate some of his victims, he'd watched from the crowds as they searched the scenes for evidence. Mickey Pistorius also believes that Twala's fixation with violence and his hatred toward women must have developed in a stage after what's called the oral stage of development, which is when children are breastfeeding. It is her belief that Twala would have had a relatively normal, non-verbal baby phase as a child with a consistent caregiver. But after that, his mother may have over-gratified his needs. She says that she's found in serial killers who fixated during the oral stage of development, their murders often show violence toward women in the breast region. This would track for Stuart Wilkin, for instance, who'd been abandoned as a baby, and the terrible mutilation of his victim's breasts and his admitted cannibalization of one victim's nipple. Pistorius says that when serial killers fixate due to an over-gratifying mother, they can no longer see themselves as separate from their mother, and as a result, grow up feeling impotent toward women. She feels that this may account for Twala's rage against women and his eventual choice of victims, and the way his fantasy was to make his victims completely submissive to him. The darkness in the minds of these types of serial predators is, of course, fascinating to investigate, but as we've seen in Catch Me a Killer, those who enter the darkness to hunt these killers often pay a high price for their important work. The profiler who would eventually take over from Mickey Pistorius as the head of the IPU, Dr. Gerard Labaskagni, said it well when he said, "You can visit the depths of hell, just don't hang around there too long." And that is the companion podcast for episode 8 and 9 of Catch Me a Killer. I'll be back in our next final episode to do another deep dive into the final killer mind of this series.